Dr. Mitch Earlywine is author of the book Understanding Marijuana, A New Look at the Scientific Evidence, and he joins us here on the Audio Stash each Wednesday. Welcome back here today, Dr. Earlywine.
A pleasure to be back.
Mitch, in the last few weeks, we've touched on the ideas of drug treatment, and I'd like to look further at treatment today. If someone does have a problem with something like alcohol, what are the best therapies to treat addiction?
There are three that have a whole lot of research support, and my favorite is the cognitive behavioral treatment, and that's one that's designed to help folks recognize what are the difficult situations that get them craving or get them in situations where they're more likely to use, and identifying those situations and planning alternative things that they can do instead of using drugs in order to have a good time or cope with stress or just pass the time.
And, you know, how expensive is cognitive behavioral therapy?
Most any mental health center in major and even smaller cities provide treatment with sliding scales, so that some folks, yes, may end up having to pay $100 a session for 3 months or something that sounds particularly exorbitant, but many places have fees that go down to as little as a dollar. If folks want to check out the Association for the Advancement of Behavioral Therapy at aabt.org, there's a really nice site there, and they can find a therapist really easily just by looking at the little link on the far left-hand side of the first page.
And is cognitive behavioral therapy successful for everyone, Mitch?
No, I can't say that any therapy really works for everyone. Folks who don't find, you know, quick success with cognitive behavioral therapy often respond well to another therapy called motivational interviewing, which is based on some cognitive behavioral therapy principles, but also uses some techniques developed by another psychologist. And then, of course, almost every city and every place in this country has a 12-step group, and a number of people really swear by the spiritual and fellowship and social support components of that treatment. And, you know, literally hundreds of thousands of folks go to meetings every single night and have something else to do and another way of, you know, dealing with a life without any chemicals.
Are these 12-step programs as successful for people who are court-ordered to go to them as for folks who come to them themselves?
What's curious about all of these treatments, even the motivational interviewing, is it depends on an individual's motivation. I think that, you know, time well spent, any therapy can be time well spent as long as folks are willing to go. And even if you are kind of dragging your feet, once you get there, you do find yourself listening in a little bit or getting a little more motivated as time goes on. But literally slapping somebody on the wrist with some kind of number of sessions you have to attend just makes for kind of a poor use of time for the therapist and the other folks who are trying to get treatment at that same location.
You know, people I know have sought treatment for addiction a number of times before they're successful. Often they'll look for a quick fix of a 21 to 30-day detox, and that includes its own regimen of chemicals. But how much time should someone realistically put out there to conquer their addiction?
I think the key comes from some of the data on cigarette smoking, in fact, which suggests that nobody really quits till about that fifth through seventh attempt or so on average, and that you really are learning a new set of behaviors, and it's just like learning to ride a bike or lay brick or anything else. It really does take time. If you're willing to give it 3 months of, you know, really committed time spent in the therapy and then a full year of regular checkups and checking in with folks and talking about it and dealing with it, I think most anyone can really make a big amount of progress with drug problems that way. But no, there isn't a 21-day inpatient program that magically makes all the craving for everything go away. And in fact, when you think about how addiction works, it makes sense that it wouldn't be that easy, or we would have cured it years and years ago.
Now, Mitch, here's the big question today. Are there people who may have an addiction to marijuana?
There's a subset of folks, depending on which estimate you look at, between 9 and 12% who show some symptoms of dependence, things like tolerance or withdrawal. But it's relatively rare, and it's about on par in severity with, say, addiction to caffeine. So the withdrawal isn't particularly severe, for example, and the negative consequences, nobody's out turning to prostitution or, you know, stealing or things like that in order to support a marijuana habit.
And for those marijuana smokers, responsible marijuana smokers, who may want to take a little break for a while or may even want to quit altogether, what are some good models to follow?
Absolutely. I think it's great for everyone who's a regular user to take time off. What often happens is people find themselves using kind of automatically, sort of this robotic, oh, it's Friday night, therefore I must smoke reaction. And all you need to do sometimes is put the vaporizer in the closet, and suddenly the cues aren't there anymore, and you find yourself going through the whole day and just sort of forgetting to use. If you really are experiencing intense craving and things like that, what we discover is craving comes and goes. Yes, if you're sitting right in the room where you always use over and over and over again, yeah, sure, your craving is going to be there. But if you go out and do something else, what a surprise, you don't even really think about marijuana in the same way. And often it's something as simple as spending time doing alternative activities that are fun. And soon you discover it's really not got you in its grip the way you might have thought.
So this is a little bit like chocolate. A little out of sight can certainly help it from being out of mind and out of mouth, as the case may be.
It's curious because those of us who are involved in cannabis activism end up being around cues more than we may realize. But if every movie in your collection is a Cheech and Chong flick, you know, if everything around your house has a big five leafer on it, if you've got hemp underwear, you know, sure enough, you do end up thinking about marijuana a lot. Well, by all means, set yourself up in a setting where that's not so prominent, and you'll find yourself having a much easier time if you've been having trouble.
Dr. Mitch Earlywine, thanks for joining us here today on Normal's Daily Audio Stash.
Always a pleasure, Chris.
We've got links to the book, Understanding Marijuana, A New Look at the Scientific Evidence, right up on our website at normalaudiostash.com.